Welcome to the CRE Podcast, 100% Canadian, 100% commercial real estate. Now, here are your hosts, Aaron Cameron and Adam Pawatic.
Hey, this is Adam from the CRE Podcast. The episode you're about to listen to was recorded a while ago. It's a little bit dated. It's one of the conferences in 2023. It was released in video format at the time for anybody that wanted to watch Aaron and I speak in person. But this, of course, will be the podcast platform. So we are going to release all the content now. It is good stuff. Some of the references might not jibe contextually with the current market. Keep that in mind when you're listening to it. And I guess the other big takeaway message is for 2024, we've invested into a podcast producer, and you're going to see episodes that are released very shortly after recording, and you'll probably see a little more social media going on. So look forward to it. Welcome to the Commercial Real Estate Podcast, powered by First National. I am Adam Pawatic, sitting here with Aaron Cameron at the Canadian Apartment Investment Conference. I want to thank Kingsett Capital for sponsoring the video series we are doing here. And of course, I want to thank Informa for hosting us. We want to welcome to the podcast Chris Ballard. He is the CEO of Passive House Canada. The topic today is going to be monetizing sustainability. Even if you don't care about the planet, care about money, you don't want to pay attention to this one. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. You put that very succinctly.
Yeah, not to be crude, but you know, it's whatever the motivation is, you know, this is important.
Before we get into even what is Passive House, what do you do? Why don't we just start with your career, Chris, and kind of work backwards?
Sure. I've had a bit of an esoteric career. Started off as a journalist, went into public affairs for many years, and that led me to a career in politics as a municipal politician in the town of Aurora, where I live, and then later as a member of provincial parliament for our area. Ended up as Minister of Housing, and then later Minister of Environment and Climate Change. And then when that career ended, looked around and was approached by this group called Passive House Canada that talked about their building standard and plans they had for the future. And I thought that fit very nicely with my career as a politician focused on housing and focused on sustainability and the environment. So I jumped on board as CEO. I've been with the group for 4 years now. We've grown exponentially across the country. We have members and employees virtually in every province of Canada. And most of our members are architects, engineers, building scientists, and policy people who are interested in a sustainable building future.
So what is Passive House?
Passive House actually has its roots in Canada, and it's a misnomer. It's more than houses. It was a literal translation from the German Passive House, and house in German, I gather, means buildings. So Passive House started in Canada in the late 1970s as a way of making. We had the OPEC oil crisis. Fuel prices were going through the roof. Governments were worried that Canadians would not be able to heat their homes in the midst of cold winters, and so started using science to design buildings that we could survive in if we couldn't heat them properly. The standard was picked up by the European Union. It was codified by a very smart group of German physicists who founded the Passive House Institute in Germany. Most countries in the EU have adopted some form of the Passive House building standard as their national building standard. And in Canada, we see the Passive House building standard incorporated, if not in name, the metrics of Passive House into some of the higher tier building standards. So very simply, Passive House, if you build to the Passive House standard, you will use about 90% less energy than a code-built building. If you do a deep energy retrofit to the Passive House standard, you'll gain about 75% less energy usage than the building you were started out to renovate. But it goes beyond that, especially these days with the effects of climate change. If you live in a Passive House, you enjoy fresh filtered air and thermal comfort. So Passive House is recognized now more and more for the safety and security of people who live and work and play in these buildings than just deep energy savings. It is those deep energy savings, though, that we like to talk to industry about, because that's how we can work to monetize sustainability.
I'm amazed at the start date. I would not assume they've been on the radar then, other than you mentioned, I guess, the OPEC crisis being the catalyst, but I'm stunned at that start date.
Yeah. If you want to Google something really cool, you can look for the Saskatchewan Conservation House, built in 1977. Still lived in today, still operating, and it used 80% less energy than similar homes built around it. And it was a science experiment, really, between the federal government and the provincial government to see if we apply this newfangled building science, what will happen? Well, what will happen is you get a really high quality building that's also very durable, doesn't need to be renovated as frequently. But Canada being Canada, the OPEC crisis subsided and governments did not pursue. The Passive House folks continued to amass data, which was shared with the EU, and they liked what they saw, and they took our lessons from Canada and from elsewhere around the world. We weren't the only ones working in this envelope first approach. And they took that back to the EU and then later on codified it into the Passive House standard. So you're right, it's got deep roots. And like so many Canadian things, we were there at the beginning and then we just didn't monetize it.
Maybe we should get into monetization. In the current environment, there's nothing more topical, of course, than, you know, trying to manage our resources effectively. So you must be having a decade in the sun here.
Well, yeah, a decade in the sun as we face even more extreme heat days. There's all sorts of things happening that you two would know probably more than I, given the depth of interviews you've done over the time. Yes, what we're being asked by business, and we're being asked by government as well, is business, I find, is nervous and generally knows that change needs to be made. There are some companies that are charging ahead and doing the right thing, and others are a little hesitant because they're not too sure what needs to be done. How do they make sure that they have a viable business, not just today, but 20 years, 30 years down the road? And in this business of building rental properties and holding them for many years, you need to make sure that you've got a building that's viable, economically viable, not just when you fill it with tenants, but 10, 20, 30 years down the road over the financial terms of that building. So minimizing energy costs is critical. And that's important, minimizing energy costs. We know with the price on carbon, it's only going to go up. It's only going to cost more and more to heat buildings and provide hot water. Electrical costs will also go up. So we can look to alternatives like air source heat pumps or ground source heating and cooling, but they run on electricity. So our focus is always on minimizing the amount of energy your building needs to begin with. In my early days with Passive House, we focused a lot on talking about the technical aspects of Passive House, how thick the walls need to be, how the insulation values, the quality of the Passive House windows or HRVs. That's been sorted out. We have really brilliant building scientists and engineers and architects around the world who've sorted that out. And we have many examples of Passive House buildings across Canada that we can point to. The focus now has to be on working with business to outline the dollars and cents, quite frankly, because
thing to build it. It's another thing to actually profit from building it.
Absolutely. I
mean, you can build it, but if it doesn't make any money or it's not economically viable, then it's a trophy asset, not actually something that can get reproduced effectively.
You're right. The last thing we want is for you can claim the moral high ground by building a green building, but if you're not making enough money at it, then it fails. So what we come up with is, working with financial types who can do the deeper dive. Total cost of building ownership is what the financial people are now looking at. And they're looking at factoring in the increased price on carbon and the government regulations that they see coming down the pipe to drive us to net zero. And using and employing the Passive House methodologies, you're going to get there and you'll get there and save money. And we have some examples of deep energy retrofits that capital costs are being repaid or captured, within 6 to 10 years. It's not every case, but in enough cases so that people sit up and pay attention. So if you're going to do a retrofit, just don't slap on new windows and a little bit of insulation. Do a deep energy dive. It'll cost you, 1 to 8% more than just a facade fix, but you'll capture a lot out of it because you will not need, for example, very complex and expensive boiler systems. Most of the the buildings our folks are involved with, and some pretty prestigious ones, everything from the 60-story Curve, the world's tallest passive house that's going up in Vancouver, to here in Toronto, we have the University of Toronto Residence in Scarborough that is totally electric, hot water and heating, cooling is all electric. They've crunched the numbers. They're not doing this for the out of the goodness of their heart. They've done it because they've crunched the numbers, and they know that the carbon price savings will more than pay for the passive house style of building. And the other thing people are more and more, and government regulations are going to be speaking to this in the, I believe, the next version of the National Building Code. So it's more than energy savings. You know, we're going to be demanding a lot more of all of our buildings, whether they be residential or commercial or education, community buildings. These have to be places of safety in the face of extreme weather. We know the smoke from wildfires. We know the heat dome killed over 600 people in BC, 85 a couple of years before that in Quebec. These are real and present dangers. And government will be saying to building owners, you have to provide a certain level of fresh air. You have to provide temperature control. So right now in Ontario, for example, we only worry about heating, but I can see the day where we'll be talking about cooling. Well, to run those systems cost effectively, you're going to need the passive house standard of retrofit and of building. So all of this leads to the monetization. Those buildings that are built to this high standard will be worth more. In fact, session I just participated in here, the advice from one of the business people at the table was that if you're looking to buy a rental property, try and find one where they haven't updated it, because whatever they want for it, you'll be able to get a discount as you explain what it's going to cost to run that over the next few years because it's so inefficient.
Quick plug too, it also gives you access to superior financing if you're going to retrofit your buildings. Don't want to gloss that aspect over.
Access to cheaper capital. Financial institutions, the main banks, are slow to come on board, but CMHC has some good financing for quote-unquote green buildings that aren't even getting near the passive house standard, but are a really good start. There's private capital that's looking for green investment. So, you know, as public reporting of our financial institutions becomes more of the go-to, as investors are demanding more of this, you know, we think there's a real case to be made for why you want to build or retrofit to this standard.
For our regular listeners, we've had this topic come up talking about Europe being ahead of the curve on this and how there are now regulations and requirements for capital investment to show their true green policy or sustainability policy. And that if you're a property owner, manager, and you require capital investments, you have to demonstrate that you truly are, you know, not just putting in a policy, but taking action against it. You have obviously your Passive House Canada. What lessons have you learned? Do you kind of foresee how some of those regulations and changes in Europe have occurred that it will come here eventually?
Right. And we've been following those regulations. A lot of them, the government was able to put them in place in Europe, especially within the EU, because of the widespread adoption of the Passive House Standard. Quite frankly, government was...
What does that mean? Does that mean that governments have adopted the Passive House Standard in their own national housing strategies?
Absolutely. Some governments, you won't see the phrase passive house, but you'll see the metrics. You'll see the physics that they talk about, energy use, for example, and insulation standards and the quality of windows that are all set out by passive house. And we're quite happy to...
You don't... Yeah, this is not an advertising exercise.
No,
yeah.
No. I tell the legislators in Canada, I do not care if you use our name. In fact, it's better if you don't. Just use our building physics, please, you know, because it is science-based. Use the physics. It's the only way Canada is going to get to its net zero by 2045 for buildings.
That number keeps changing, by the way. It keeps getting further and further in the future.
Well, it was 2050, and then it's 2045. I think some are talking about 2040. But, you know, it's not just the federal government. It's the major municipalities in Canada are looking to decarbonize their buildings, Toronto, Vancouver, et cetera. And so, again, going back to monetizing that sustainability, you have that building that is built to a high quality, it's worth more.
So, and I took you off topic there. I apologize. We were talking about the regulations in Europe. European countries have adopted the passive house approach, whether in name or not. Where are we as far as Canadian adoption and starting to take effect, particularly the regulations, but just the standards?
Well, in Canada, we have over 400 municipalities that have declared climate emergencies, and they've all pledged to do more. They recognize that across Canada, on average, 38% of greenhouse gas emissions come from buildings. So this is one area that they're all virtually looking to move in. And in Ontario and many jurisdictions across the country, they do have some say in terms of environmental standards for their buildings, and they're working in that area. But I mean, we have Montreal, Vancouver, Toronto. When you add their populations up, that's a big chunk of the Canadian population. Toronto and Vancouver have, Toronto has its top tier building standard is basically passive house plus embodied carbon. Vancouver's added embodied carbon in, and it actually talks about passive house as one of the higher tiers of building. And every year, we know with the tiered approach, BC government, their building code is a tiered approach as well, with passive house at the very top. Every cycle, the bottom level drops off. And so gradually, they're moving the building industry to that passive house level. So the growth is significant. We have some small municipalities in Canada that have just said, we're going to adopt passive house. We're not going to call it passive house. It's easy. We'll just adopt it. And others like Toronto, Vancouver, and I think Montreal will be following along, have a tiered approach or a stepped approach, which makes sense for business.
So you are getting some traction within the Canadian
huge
borders.
Yeah. We train about 2,000 architects and engineers every year in passive house methodologies. It's not difficult. As we say, it's not rocket science. It is building science, but it's not rocket science. We're training a lot of people, and I spend most of my day talking to business people, talking to architects, engineers, and government regulators and elected officials, just to let them know what's possible. There is fear out there on the business side of, well, how are we going to do this? You know, how are we going to meet these requirements of government? And at the same time, we hear from consumers and others about their fear of the effects of climate change. The good news is that it's eminently doable, what we're proposing. It's been done in Europe. It's being done in Europe and beyond. Australia, New Zealand have very robust passive house movements. It's being done in Canada. It's for a number of years. So I like to try and work to calm those fears. We know what to do. We know how to do it.
Obviously, regulatory change is the fastest way for widespread adoption. You know, stroke of a pen, there you go. To keep us on the topic of monetization, developers you're getting in front of, is it an easy sell? Does it make sense? Does it click right away? Is there any reason that somebody wouldn't choose that standard in the face of an economic reason to do so?
Well, it's interesting. Some of the larger developers of big projects, whether it be rental or condominium, initially were skeptical, but their finance people have been crunching the numbers, and their architects and engineers have been talking to our architects and engineers. And so there, a few of them are, you know, have been dipping their toes into the water. Obviously, the group that's building the Curve in Vancouver has jumped in.
Is that the high profile one
that's
you mentioned
high
earlier?
High profile one, yeah. 60 story condominium or strata that is planned for Vancouver. They've jumped in. And then we have other developers who are saying, listen, we know why we need to build to this standard. We know how to build to this standard, but we're not going to do it until everybody else has to do it. So that's unfortunately where the stick has to come in of regulatory change. We know that's coming. I'm encouraging businesses to get out ahead of it, so they're not worried about new building codes. They're exceeding the minimum by the time that shows up.
Well, it's funny, we actually were talking about this kind of related topic on a previous podcast today. In real estate, nobody wants to be a groundbreaker. They just want to do what's already been done because you can kind of anticipate what's going to happen. Real estate does not take change very well and likes to just do things the exact same way.
You know, I get that. That's the human condition. I find with the building industry, you know, I would get comments, we've built this way for the past 100 years, you know. That's totally understandable. The world is a vastly different place than 100 years ago. And we have to be nimble. We have to adopt new ideas, new techniques. We have to be innovative. And we have to make sure that our businesses are sustainable in the face of climate change regulation and in face of extreme weather that climate change brings to us. We hear a lot about the Paris Agreement or the Paris Accord and what that means for us all. The agreement that most of the world's countries signed on to was to try and keep global warming to 1.5 degrees centigrade. We've blown past that. There's some estimates we're going to hit 2.4, 2.8. So my question, and I don't know the answer for this, is, you know, how many buildings in Canada will be uninhabitable in the next 10 to 15 years because of overheating, for example, or because of rising coastal lines? These are real issues that I know are being debated and discussed at the boardroom level.
We're almost out of time, Chris. You talked about the carrots and sticks, and I absolutely appreciate the financialization of sustainability and that buildings are worth more and will be worth more for that investment. But we've also just talked about our industry is rather sticky when it comes to innovation and change. So I think there's probably a little bit of a policy push from certain levels of judgment of government to get us to, you know, maybe adopt quicker. What types of pushes are you thinking about? Are you discussing at different levels of government?
Well, we have municipal building codes, which is really big on creating a level playing field within that jurisdiction, within that municipality. So whether it's the Toronto Green Standard or what Vancouver's done with its passive house bylaws, it's forcing buildings to prove their efficiency and be safer for inhabitants. That's really...
That's not a new build, but there's, you know...
No, that's new builds, and that's rolling out in more and more municipalities across Canada. At the provincial level, I mean, all the provinces, territories, and Canada have signed on to the Pan-Canadian Agreement for Green Growth and Climate Change, and that really is forcing all the players. They all pledged, they all signed on to meet the Paris Agreement targets. So more and more provincial legislation we'll see coming to push the bar higher and level that playing field. If everybody has to do better, if everybody has to get to 50, 60, 70% energy reduction, GHG emission reductions, that's probably easier for everybody in the industry. And so I see that happening. And I see the federal government ultimately, because it's responsible for responding to our Paris Accord agreements. And I can see it, if it doesn't see enough movement at the municipal and provincial levels, unilaterally having to work to ratchet up the standards that we need. I come from a public policy background. I would rather see business do this on its own, because sometimes public policy or government legislation is too big a stick, too broad a stick, and doesn't always finesse things right or to the best. But if industry is not going to do enough fast enough, then government is stepping in.
Great. I'm very interested to watch how this plays itself over the next 4, 5, 6 years. It is something that's very, very important, and very interested to hear your thoughts and comments. I'd like to thank First National for powering the podcast. Thank you to KingSett for sponsoring this episode and the video series here at the Canadian Apartment Conference. And again, thanks, Chris, for coming on. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Thank you for listening to the CRE podcast. The information from this broadcast is not to be relied upon as financial investing, professional accounting, or legal advice. First National Financial LP holds Financial Services Commission of Ontario License Number 10514 and 11252.